everyone, and welcome to the Trade Addicts Podcast, where the first step is admitting you have a problem. Please welcome your hosts for today's session, Dynasty Outhouse and Brian Haar.
I am Dynasty Outhouse, and I have a trading problem.
And I'm Brian Haar, and I also have a trading problem.
And I'm Michael Zingoni, and I also have a trading problem.
All right, you guys can hear we have a guest, but more importantly, Brian, I missed you. How was your week away? You were away from us.
Yes, I was. It was delightful. The week. Not being away from you, bud. You know, doing the show here has been a big part of the last few months, so I really missed it. I really, really missed it. Monday night, I kind of was sitting around, like, fidgeting, you know? Kind of just like, I should be doing the pod. But sometimes a little rest and relaxation, you need to do that. And I did, and it was a great week. So thanks for asking. But I'm super happy and excited to be back.
All right. Glad you had fun. Glad you relaxed. Nice and pumped to get back into the recording session. But we're done talking about you. As you heard, we have the FF Zinger himself, Michael Zingoni, on our show today. And I even asked him how to say his last name. And as I was speaking, I was like, I hope this comes out correctly. Did I get it?
Yeah, you did. It's a tough one. I've heard literally every single pronunciation you can imagine. Zang. Some people put an A in there for some reason. Zangone. Zingone is a common one.
That was exactly where I would have gone if I didn't ask you first. I definitely would have got a Zingone.
Yeah.
All right.
So. Actually, a feud within my family. There's some that say Zingone, there's some that say Zingoni. It's an interesting clash.
All right, so the usual stuff. Let's get down to it. Are you a Mike or a Michael?
Michael.
Awesome. Yep. All right, Michael, how long have you been playing fantasy football?
I've been playing for about 10 years. My first season was in 2007. I was only like 14 years old, so yep, do the math, whatever, I'm pretty young. I had the first overall pick, and I picked LaDainian Tomlinson, and he, as well as Adrian Peterson in his rookie year, Calvin Johnson, Andre Johnson, all those guys, actually won my first year in my first league playing with my brother, and I've been hooked ever since. I've been playing standard redraft for as long as I can remember. Just started Dynasty back in 2013, so I'm playing that for about 5 years now.
Oh, but well, we skipped over the important part. Why don't you actually tell these people who you are?
Yeah, so I'm Michael Zingoni at FF Zinger. Recently started writing for DLF back in November, and more recently started writing for FF Statistics with Addison Hayes. We're doing great stuff on that website. I have about 15 articles posted on DLF at this point, dropping a new one later in the week on the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and their Summer Sleeper as part of that series. But yeah, I've been having a great time with it. You can find me at FF Zinger. I do a lot of data analysis and try to put together trends about players and who to target based on those trends. So data analysis is really my strength, I guess.
Cool. I like having smart people on because they could say the smart things and I can, you know, claim credit because it was on my show that they said it. All right. Awesome. So you've been playing fantasy football for practically as long as I have, though it seems you're kind of half my age. So,
yep.
I mean, rock on. And you says here you've been playing Dynasty since 2013.
Mm-hmm.
How did you jump in? Startup draft or orphans?
So it was actually an expansion. It wasn't even an orphan. Wasn't a Ooh. Startup. My brother... I have an older brother. He was part of a dynasty league that had been established since like 2007 with a bunch of his high school and college friends. And they had 10 teams. They were looking to expand to 12. So I jumped in with another guy. And basically, I mean, looking back on it, I had no idea what I was doing. And I don't think they really did either, because most of my, like, the way that the draft went between me and the other guy who joined, we literally just drafted free agents in the league. We didn't like get to draft anyone off of anyone's team, so it was really difficult to actually build the team. That made it so much fun, doing the rookie drafts, building my team literally from scratch. Like, my quarterback one was Jake Locker, and it was it's been a great time. That got me hooked, trying to build up. I think I went 3-10 for 3 straight years before finally, like, actually becoming relevant. So that's been a ton of fun. And I've joined like four or five leagues since.
It's got to be super satisfying building an actual contender from, like you said, literally nothing.
Yeah. And that's totally my strongest team at this point. So it's really fun. It's going to be a fun 2018 season.
Nice. All right. So clearly you had to have done a bunch of trades coming up from nothing like that.
Yeah.
So give me what, let's start with the happy thoughts. What's one of your, some of your best trades?
Mm-hmm. So two of my best trades that I can remember, one was like a main one that really helped turn some of my teams around. I sent Isaiah Crowell and a fourth round pick in 2015, for Davante Adams and a third round pick. So I got the pick upgrade while moving from Crowell to Davante Adams. I was a big Adams guy coming out. And after his down 2015 season, wanted to get as many shares as I could, ship Crowell off. That turned out really well.
Yeah, that worked out rather perfectly for you. So yeah. Before we actually started recording, Brian was nudging me saying that you wrote a Davante Adams piece and how I would find it intriguing.
Yeah, so that was my first article for FF Statistics. I'm trying to write a series for them called Fantasy Mythbusters, where I kind of delve into the data to back up some narratives that some players have about them. The first one that I looked into was a common narrative that Davante Adams is an inefficient wide receiver. He has a low yards per reception. He tends to be touchdown dependent. So I delved into that. You can find that article on FF Statistics. The conclusion was it was a myth. So I hope to find some that are both myths and not myths, kind of like the actual show Mythbusters. You never really know what you're going to get until the end.
Cool, man. I kind of thought Brian was just being a jerk, but that actually does sound intriguing.
See, I'm here to surprise sometimes here.
Surprising how much of a jerk you can be. Yeah, I get it.
You love me.
I know, but I don't have to talk about it. All right, so Michael is actually the first guest we've ever had to fill out the show sheet with the answers for these questions. And next to his best trades, underneath the Crowell trade, was Jordan Matthews, a second and a third for Joseph Randall, and two 2015 firsts.
Yep.
Now,
yeah, that was another good one, selling high on Jordan Matthews. I had that team had a lot of wide receiver depth. That was the second year of a startup that I had. I've got DeAndre Hopkins, Keenan Allen, Davante Adams. That was that same league. Golden Tate, Brandon Cooks, etc. Wow. So I figured I could ship Jordan Matthews, who I wasn't even starting, and picked up some firsts, and that worked out pretty well. I'm a Jordan Matthews truther. I love the player, but that was too good of an offer to pass up, and it certainly worked out.
Do you remember who the first turned into, or did you even hold on to him that long?
I think one of them was a 2016 first, and I think it turned into Josh Doctson, and the other one was Carson Wentz, but then I made a bad trade with Carson Wentz, which I've actually forgot to put onto these worst trade ones, which is probably one of my worst trades ever.
That's
which
cool. I see one here that we're definitely going to talk about in a second anyway. Actually, that's all right. Let's just jump right into this.
Yeah.
You traded Doug Baldwin for Theo Riddick.
Yep. Yep. That happened.
Ouch.
Let's delve into this a little bit. something to delve into. All right. Because even back then, Baldwin was still scoring points.
Yeah, but he wasn't Dougie B.
No.
He wasn't Dougie B yet.
Nope. This was the season before he exploded. It was the offseason right before that. I wanted some more running back depth. Theo Riddick was like the guy for PPR scoring. Like the Theo Riddick style back was just coming into the NFL. Like he was being referenced all the time as like the PPR back. And figured I'd just do a one-for-one trade and try to acquire him. That didn't work out.
No, that did not.
No.
Hey, we've all been there, buddy.
Yep. Yep.
All right. Well, let's talk about this Amari Cooper one, because there's a lot of arrows. So
yeah.
What'd you do to this one?
Yeah, so in one of my leagues, throughout the course of 2 years, I have essentially dropped Amari Cooper.
Cool.
Yeah, so that's a great start, right? So in 2015, So Cooper's rookie year, before he even played a snap, I traded Amari Cooper for Randall Cobb, who was coming off a big season, Aaron Rodgers, new extension, yada, yada. I thought I was a contender, so figured I'd make the move. Obviously, that didn't turn out particularly well. Randall Cobb hasn't been doing a whole lot since. And last year, I was all on the Kenny Britt hype train.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So I shipped Randall Cobb for Kenny Britt straight up. And this past offseason, I dropped Kenny Britt.
And I would love to point out the fact that he actually put a frowny face after the word drop.
He did. That's impressive. We get artwork on the show sheet.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah. All right. No emojis, but just the standard keyboard smiley frowny face.
All right. Well, during rookie draft trades, I'm not going to... Juju fell for everybody. I'm not going to give you crap for that bad one. No. So
I traded up in a desperation for Zay Jones and it didn't work out.
That was also before his little mental health stuff. So
yeah. So we'll wipe that one clean.
Yeah.
Especially because I'm still staring at Doug Baldwin for Theo Riddick. Oh, man. All right. So let's go to your guiding trade principle that you use to trade offers and for evaluating trades sent to you.
Yeah. So I posted a tweet kind of about this maybe about a month ago. Basically, how I've kind of built my teams throughout the years that I've played Dynasty. I like to draft in rookie drafts. I like to draft running backs. I think they tend to have the highest ceiling within the draft classes. Obviously, 2014 was something different. Picked a bunch of wide receivers in that class. But generally, I like to have young wide receivers on my team and then keep drafting running backs. And then when those running backs hit, you'll almost never find me with a first round dynasty startup, even second round really dynasty startup running back on my team. I always like to trade those players for a young wide receiver and more picks to take more running backs. So an example of a trade that I made at the trade deadline last offseason was I traded Kareem Hunt for Jarvis Landry, 2 firsts and 2 thirds, which was, I thought, kind of in line with my philosophy in that sense.
Yeah, that's a heck of a trade. I like that a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just like the way that works. That's a good move. I like that. All right. So now that we know who you are, and these people hopefully feel that they can trust whatever words you're going to say, because you sound like a smart guy.
He sounds a lot smarter than we do, bud.
I know. That point.
Oh, okay. Sorry. See, if I was smart, I would know that that's the point.
Maybe if you didn't go on vacation and take your time off to relax and rejuvenate, you'd just be in the grind of knowing what you're supposed to know about the podcast.
I'm shaking out the rust, man.
There you go. Speaking of rusty, Delanie Walker got an extension and
excellent.
He's old.
You know, he's younger than both of us, right?
He's football old. That's what matters.
Oh, okay. Okay, sorry.
Okay, so the reason I even care about this at all is because someone right away... Hey, you're a Jonnu truther, right? Which, A, I stick with believer, not truther. I don't think this affects the way I think about Jonnu at all. I kind of assumed Walker would be around until the end of his career at this point. It's really just when will he slide into the tight end 2 role and let Jonnu shine, which I think will happen quickly under the newfound fresh offense. Anything else to say about Delanie Walker getting a 2-year extension?
Yeah, I mean, I think it makes it a lot easier to ship off like a second round pick for him if you're a contender, knowing that you can potentially get more than just 1 year out of him. You know, it's always the risk with old players. That's why, you know, Larry Fitzgerald, for example, has been devalued throughout the past like 3 years because no one knows if he's going to just hang it up after the next year.
Is the year Frank Gore retires. This is it.
Yeah. I think the extension certainly good for his value, and makes it easier to invest in him as a contender.
Do you actually believe in him, or are you a Jonnu person like I am?
I am a Jonnu fan. I was hoping that Delanie Walker wouldn't get a contract extension so that Jonnu could shine. But Walker's going to be, as long as he's around, he's going to catch 60 to 70 balls, I think.
Yeah, I agree with that. I really was hoping Walker would move on. You know, I'm a big Jonnu guy too, but I got to be honest, this definitely hurts his value, at least for the next couple of seasons. I mean, we're talking about a perennial top 5 tight end here in Walker. It's not like he's, you know, a middle of the road guy. This is a guy who puts up stud seasons. Each of the last 3 years, he's been top five. So, you know, I definitely think him extending out hurts Janu's short-term value. You know, the good news is tight ends typically break out a little later than other positions. So, you know, I'm not panicking. But at the same time, if I own Janu in certain leagues, I'm going to try to move for Walker. You know, that second round pick that Michael was talking about, I'd send that for Delaney anyways if I'm a Janu guy, because you bring him in and you have him. And then if he goes down, then, you know, then Janu, obviously his value jumps. But you'll have his replacement. You have Walker's replacement as well. So, but yeah, no, I agree. It's interesting news. I was kind of hoping, just like Michael and you, Outhouse, that he would move along, but it is what it is.
All right, so let's actually jump into the main part of the show, which I didn't actually tell anybody what it was. Over the next four sessions, we are going to take a division from each conference, and we are going to rate their jerseys from favorite to least favorite, spanning any era, any alternate, any... I hope no one picked Color Rush. Actually, I think I picked a Color Rush, so I guess I can't really talk bad about it.
I did too.
But spoiler alert, so let's keep... As long as nobody picks the Seahawks Color Rush when it comes
time. Oh, it's coming. It's, are you kidding me? Lime green, baby.
That is awful, but all right.
And plus, the greatest uniforms of all time are a Color Rush uniform, so...
Or
the most badass, harsh. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
All right, well... We'll deal with that when it comes, because I can't handle that right now. So what we're going to do is we're going to rank some jerseys, because it's still not even preseason yet. The Hall of Fame game is this week, so we are almost at football.
Oh my God, guys, football is awesome. Back.
Yeah, I mean, I think I saw some tweet that this Sunday is the first Sunday, and then we have football until the Super Bowl.
Oh my word.
Just okay, yeah. Everybody, breathe
everybody,
that in.
Oh, that's, yeah.
We made it. Everybody, we made it.
Yeah.
All right, so besides rating jerseys, we are going to drop a fantasy bold take about each team. It doesn't necessarily need to be fantasy, because I don't think all of mine are necessarily fantasy related. Just, you know, something that can be related to football and that team. So let's get started. First, we're each going to give out our jersey rankings. Then we'll go through and do our bold takes. I almost said hot takes, but it's not time for that yet. All right, so Michael, give us some jerseys. Oh, dude, come on, man. This is awful. This week, we're doing the NFC and the AFC East. So let's start with the AFC East. Michael, why don't you rank the AFC East jerseys for us?
Sure, Outhouse. So... The first one that I put was the Patriots red. They've got like a red and white jersey that the red base I really, really like. I think it looks sharp. I really like the Dolphins dark orange jersey second. This, I got to say, I haven't really looked at jerseys a whole lot in detail before this, studying for this podcast. I got to say, the NFC East does not have very good jerseys in my opinion.
No, we picked a very bad division to start with.
Yeah, so... third on my list would be the Bills blue jersey, and then rounding out the AFC East would be the Jets green. It's the best of their jerseys, I think, but it's not really good.
I actually stared at the Patriots red for a while. I actually don't... It's weird, I'm a Devils fan, but I was about to say I don't like red jerseys. But, like, I don't know, just... I like that red and white. Just it's so like almost simplistic that I think it's actually very nice.
Yeah, the Dolphins one really stood out to me. I didn't even know they had that jersey, but then I looked at it. I was like, wow, I've seen them play in this, and it's really nice.
All right, Brian, jerseys.
Yeah, my first jersey or the first in my list here is the Dolphins home jersey, the teal. I really. Like that jersey, always have from back in the Merino days, and now the current version of the jersey is really clean. So I like that one probably the best. My second jersey in the AFC East is the Jets jersey from the 78-97 season, and this one is actually more so. One thing I did when I was thinking about the jerseys. I did take the whole uniform into consideration as well, which I don't know if that's legal, but I just made it legal. So, I really like the Jets. That green, I don't know what to call it, like AstroTurf green almost, you know?
I like it.
I like that jersey a lot, and that uniform is one of the best. Both of the New York teams, I know I'm jumping ahead here, but both the New York teams, the Giants as well, should go back to the helmets with the words on them. So Jets should have Jets on it, and Giants should spell Giants out instead of that big, ugly block New York NY thing. In my opinion,
the Jets helmet. I'm all about the Jets helmet.
Yeah, so that was second on my list, and then third was the Patriots away jersey. I really like that jersey. That uniform in general is real clean to me. It's red, white, and blue. It's very patriotic. So I appreciate that jersey. And then lastly, I have the Bills home uniform. I liked the 90s Bills uniforms a little better. I like the red helmet better than the white helmet personally. Yeah. But the blue jerseys aren't. None of the AFC East jerseys are really terrible, you know, but that's how I had them. So,
yeah.
What about you, Al Pats?
I started a little different. I went Jets throwback. They have that awesome deep blue with that bright gold number. And the reason this is also my favorite jersey is because I had a friend, well, I have a friend whose last name is Sanchez, and they debuted those blue jerseys when Mark Sanchez was their quarterback. So right away I went out and bought that jersey for him. So I have like a little bit of a connection to how awesome that jersey is with how awful of a player that we got on that jersey.
Nice. So you buy jerseys for your friends, huh?
I have bought jerseys for a friend.
Oh, interesting. Interesting.
I didn't spend $400 on a Saquon game ready jersey or anything.
I don't know who would do that.
Not to be too specific or anything. That was an arbitrary jersey I just picked out of the thin air.
Ryan, you got a birthday coming up that Outhouse should know about?
Yeah, it's in December.
Yeah.
So right around the time where you have no money because it's Christmas and you have kids, that's when you should think of me.
I'm always thinking of you, Brian. All right. Weird. My next jersey is good old Dolphins green, because that is like a color of my childhood. I mean, when you were growing up in the mid-80s, everybody was a Dolphins fan because of Dan Marino.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody had that. The two greens. Everybody had the Dolphins green or the Charlotte Hornets green.
Yes.
Everybody had those puffy starter jackets. All the girls wore the Charlotte Hornets starter jackets.
Muggsy Bogues.
Oh, yeah. Little man. Sidetrack. So I love that green. That green is just, I mean, I was about to say iconic, which it might be, but like, I mean, personally, it's very nostalgic. For Patriots, I think this might be one of the only white jerseys I choose. I don't know why. I love the stark, dark blue on the bright white. I love it has the side stripes, because most white jerseys are just white all around. These actually are broken up the side of the body has the blue stripes. And if we're going into helmets, I love the Patriots helmet with the actual Patriot hiking the ball. None of this boring, whatever the hell they have. What the hell's on the Patriots helmets these days? Their actual
logo.
It's
like a Minuteman, isn't it?
Yeah, now it's boring. Now it's just their logo. Who cares about that? And I rounded it out with the Bills' regular old blue, because they don't really have anything exciting at all. But again, I like the little older ones where they have that thick stripes around the collar and the arms, because plain blue is just boring. All right, so let's jump into some bold takes. Let's go a team at a time. How about that? So, Michael, give us your Jets take.
Okay, my Jets hot take, I know Addison's going to love this one, is Jermaine Kearse is a top 50 PPR wide receiver in 2018.
I love it.
I hate this for the pure reason of why can't players be good when they're on Seattle?
Yep.
That's what I want to know.
Well, yeah, he was pretty good.
Curse was trash.
Oh, what? Dude.
Curse had a really bad season on Seattle.
Really bad. Yeah. Like, very, very bad.
Yeah.
But no, I have a couple of shares of him because he's cheap everywhere right now. And he did pretty well last year. So he can definitely get behind top 50.
You're looking at a guy who is entering like the kind of tail end of wide receiver peak. I think he's 28 or 29. The guys had over 500 yards in four straight seasons. They didn't really add anyone at the wide receiver position. Yeah, Anun was coming back, and he could certainly take targets. But Curse was the wide receiver 26, I think, last year in PPR, and they potentially upgraded the QB position with Darnold, or even if McCown starts again. He's currently going as like the over the wide receiver 100 in Dynasty and Redraft leagues, and I see a lot of like potential for him to do just as well as last season, maybe a little bit worse, which is why I said top 50. But still, I mean, that's a usable fantasy asset for your team.
Yeah, we were both kind of surprised at the idea of top 50. So it's still, you know, pretty out there to, you know, to say definitively you think he'll do that well still.
Yeah, I mean, that would be double, or I guess cutting in half his ADP right now. So, you know, I'm not going to go on a limb and say that Jermaine Curse is a top 24 wide receiver, but I mean, he could be a wide receiver 4 or 5 for your fantasy team for sure.
Yeah, still good value. Yeah. All right, Brian, Jets, go.
Isaiah Crowell will run for 1,000 yards. That is my bold take for the New York Jets.
Yeah, I was letting the silence kick in for a little bit, especially because we were talking about a bad trade with Isaiah Crowell before.
Yeah,
or
so here,
a good trade. Or you traded away Crowell and it went well for you.
Yeah, it was a good trade, yeah.
So, yes, I there's no disagreement that that was an amazing trade, Michael.
Yeah.
I just look at Crowell's situation here, and I look at the production over the last two seasons in a very similar timeshare of a backfield. I think that what he did in Cleveland, sharing the backfield with Duke Johnson, it's going to be a similar situation in New York. So
that also is a piece of news we missed. Elijah McGuire broke his foot recently, right?
Yes, he did.
Yeah.
So that gives Crow a little bit more touches.
Yeah, I mean, Bilal Powell will be there, obviously, and be the third down back. But I think Crowell is going to be, you know, he's going to be the in-between the 20s guys or guy. And, you know, he's had two pretty decent seasons in Cleveland, four pretty decent seasons in Cleveland when you look at the overall numbers, and the last two especially. So, you know, I think he has the opportunity, you know, if he gets the volume that I'm expecting him to get, I think he'll probably set a career high in terms of carries. Last year was his career high previously at 206 carries. I think he'll probably best that in New York. So if he does and he, you know, has similar production to what he's had, I think 1,000 yards rushing is within the realm of possibility. So that is my bold take for the Jets.
I went the opposite direction of you guys. You guys seem very positive, and I'm about to be a little bit of a Debbie Downer on this one. I say next year, no Jets players are going to be drafted in the top 100 picks in the Superflex League. Now, it's not a super bold take because there's only one there right now, but everyone is claiming value on Robbie Anderson, on Quincy Enunwa. You know, Jermaine Curse, you pointed out, was the wide receiver 26 last year, which I never would have guessed.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't think any of this is really going to pan out. I think the Jets are in for a Brown-style long haul, which I don't think their front office is good enough to do. I think their players are decent, but their team is just awful, and I don't know if I can trust what they have to get any better. I think, I don't know, I think everyone's going to struggle, and I think maybe it takes 2 years for them to rebound, but I think next year, nobody in the top 100.
I disagree, and here's why. Two reasons, actually.
Because Crowell's going to rush for 1,000 yards? And
no.
He's gonna...
No. One, I don't think Crowell's going to be the starting running back in the 19 season. I think he is this year, and he's going to run for over 1,000 yards, and then I think he's going to be traded or moved. The two reasons I think the Jets will have players in the top 100, one is Sam Darnold, because in super flex leagues, those young quarterbacks, even if he's crap this year, which he may be, I think that he will hold some value in Superflex leagues. And the other reason is, I think Le'Veon Bell ends up in New York with the Jets.
What?
Man, that's a fire take.
So,
and save that for the end of the series when we do our hot takes.
I will bring it back up. But yes, I believe that is where he ends up. He's a rapper in his mind. It's terrible. It's terrible. I've listened to it. It is literally some of the worst hip hop crap I've ever heard in my life. Right, and that's I'm not saying that because I'm a disgruntled Pittsburgh fan either. Good for Le'Veon. He feels like he's worth what he's worth, and the Jets are going to have the money to pay him. Yeah. And I think New York's a city that will call to him. So, yeah.
I was going to say, Ryan, you think Le'Veon chases the money next offseason then?
I think the money combined with that specific location of New York City will be enough to get him there, yes. Yeah. I think that combination will be deadly for him. I don't think he gives a rat's behind about winning, to be honest with you. Maybe that's not fair.
Well, if he's super did, Pittsburgh is the place to be. Pittsburgh would be one of the places to stay to win.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And he's not staying in Pittsburgh. So.
Wow, you just like scorched my take right there.
Apologies.
But it was worth it.
Hey, in all fairness to you, you know, that's not a current Jets player.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. All right, let's keep going. I need to keep going. All right.
Take a drink of water, bud.
I'm going to take a drink. You give me... Let's go with the Bills. How about that?
Sure. So kind of a popular sleeper pick this year amongst the tight end group. I think Charles Clay finishes a top 10 tight end in points per game in 2018.
That's a very, very good little addendum you added to the end of that.
Yeah, that's the main thing with Charles Clay. He has had over 9 points per game in 5 straight seasons, dating back to 2013. He's just really struggled to stay healthy. Seems like I've got him on a few teams. Seems like every week he's either banged up or missing three or four games a season. But I think he's probably in line for arguably the most targets on that team. Granted, they might be coming from Josh Allen, but you know, someone's got to score some points in that offense. And you know, I'm not a proponent of, you know, reaching for guys just because they're on a horrible depth chart, but you know, Charles Clay's proven that he can be a good player and a good tight end in the league. So I think that's certainly in the realm of possibility.
Yeah, especially because they keep having bad quarterbacks and bad quarterbacks lean on tight ends.
Yeah.
No, I like it because I'm always a little bit of a Charles Clay, and he's a guy I end up with at the end of drafts because I punt tight end way too long, so I have to grab like 6 of them just to make sure I have one that's usable. Something upstairs just fell down, but I don't hear a child screaming, so we're going to keep going. All right, so moving on. Brian, what's your Bills take, or do you want to talk about Charles Clay?
No, I'll move along. I like that pick. I like Clay. I think, you know, everything that was said is legit. So my Bills take is that Kelvin Benjamin and all 250 pounds of him will score double-digit touchdowns in Buffalo this season.
He'll be the first person over 45 to score double-digit touchdowns.
He's not 45, dude. How old is he now, though? That's very interesting. Now I have to look it up. See what you do to me?
I make you think.
So he's not even 30 yet, dude. He's 27
he's like
years
27?
Old. He's 27 yeah. years old. He's 27 years old. Yes. It's only his fourth NFL season, so... But yeah, no, I think Ben. Look, somebody's got to catch the ball there. Now we did talk about Clay. Obviously, he's going to get his too, if the quarterbacks can get him the ball, or Benjamin the ball for that matter. But yeah, I just think it comes down to them not having all that many weapons. You know, McCoy, obviously the offense kind of runs through him. I don't even know if he's going to be playing midseason.
Let's say it might not this
stuff,
year.
Right? So. You know, obviously Josh Allen, you know, I mean, we've talked about him on the show and everybody's kind of down on him. who knows what his accuracy will be like if he's even the guy that's playing. I don't really know what the heck's going on in Buffalo. It's hard to talk about the Bills.
That also leads into my bold prediction is that, well, it's not necessarily fantasy related. I think the Bills get the first overall pick next year in the NFL draft.
Wow. Yeah.
I can definitely
yeah,
see that.
That's, yeah, certainly in the realm of possibility.
It ain't going to be Cleveland for the first time in a long time.
So my question is, do the Bills then trade back and ruin some poor young wide receiver's career by drafting him in the first round?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, if you're the Bills and you get the 101 next year, I think you got to do what the Titans did when they had, I think maybe the second pick when they already had Mariota, I think it was a situation where if you got your
with the Eagles, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I think that was the trade. If you've got your quarterback, if you got a top two or three pick, the odds say you should trade that and pick up some more players.
Or draft a running back, right, Brian?
There's nobody like Saquon Barkley in next year's class. or the next 10 years class. So they'll be talking about Barkley like they talk about Peterson. Oh, he's the next Saquon Barkley. I'm telling you.
Mm-hmm.
Y'all better get on board, man. We're going for a ride.
We'll still be doing this podcast in 10 years. We'll talk about it then.
I'm sure your listeners know, but Brian did take Saquon Barkley 101 in a startup that he and I are in together.
Oh, we have talked about it.
So Michael, I did that, absolutely. And I had a very good reason for doing it. I was very happy about it.
Yeah.
And then Outhouse actually started a similar league that was built kind of around Bobby's.
I asked him first, but I straight up stole it.
So it's a very similar league. It's a charity league, and we're all playing for charities. Very similar. And I did the exact same thing. I had the 101, and I took him again. And I was going to take somebody different just to have different shares of different players, and I just couldn't do it. It was just one of those things where I don't know. I know I'm slightly crazy and I'm definitely biased, but Barkley is my guy and I'm getting him everywhere I can possibly get him, even if I'm overpaying slightly for him or substantially for him.
You do you, buddy.
Yeah,
that's right. Anyways, that was a little tangent.
Yeah, now that
I've gone
sideways.
Never going to get through an episode without talking about Saquon Barkley.
All right, so Brian, you're talking. Keep talking. Dolphins, what's your take?
All right, so my bold take for the Miami Dolphins is that Ryan Tannehill returns to pre-2016 form and throws for 4,200 yards and 25 touchdowns.
Ooh.
Boom.
Wow. Yeah, that would make him a high-end QB2 probably, low-end QB1.
Yep.
That would be shocking. Like, that's almost a hot take.
But would it really?
Yeah, Tannehill's bad.
He's done it twice before.
Has he really?
Yeah.
He did it the two years prior to the two knee injuries. He was hurt in 2016 in I think week 13 or 14 or something like that. And he was not having as great a year that year as he had in 15 and 14, but in 14 and 15 Tannehill was a really solid player. I'm trying to get the numbers up here. So in 14, 4,045 yards, 27 touchdowns, 12 picks. That's solid.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
The following year, 42-10, 24 touchdowns and 12 picks. Again, that's really solid. Yeah. So anyways, I don't know. I mean, obviously the main thing is, can the guy stay healthy? You know, and then what does Adam Gase do with that offense? Do they open it up a little more with Tannehill, a healthy Tannehill back there? You know, how Kenny Stills on the deep routes, if Devontae Parker takes a step, if Mike Gesicki can be a red zone threat. You know, I can see it. I can actually see this happening. I mean, it's I'm not super confident in it, but it wouldn't totally surprise me. So
all right, so why don't you, Michael, tell us where you think this Dolphins offense is headed, because I love your take.
Yeah, so I will say that if Brian's prediction comes true, I think mine is almost a lock, that Kenny Stills is a top 24 wide receiver in 2018.
Woo!
Yeah, I've been riding the Kenny Stills bandwagon for all offseason, so much so that I actually, in the Scott Fishbowl, I took Kenny Stills over Devontae Parker with both of them still on the board.
I support that.
Putting my picks where my mouth is.
Nice.
But yeah, I mean, Kenny Stills, like, he's outperformed Parker in two straight seasons, like, pretty handedly in the same exact offense. Devontae Parker, I'm just not going to believe it until I see it. I'm fine with missing out on the guy. I think Stills is a really solid player, and he has been really efficient with his targets. And if he can crack the, you know, 110 to 120 target barrier, which he had over 100 last year, and Jarvis Landry's 160 to 70 targets are gone, then I think he can easily crack the top 24, and I'd be surprised if he didn't with that amount of targets. So,
well, I love that.
Yeah, I like that a lot, too.
All right, and speaking of those vacated targets and Tannehill returning to form, my bold take is that Mike Gesicki is going to be a top 8 tight end this year, and that will turn him into a top 8 dynasty tight end, I think. Especially with reports now that Albert Wilson isn't really doing much. Danny Amendola is supposedly the main slot wide receiver, which means he's going to get injured in maybe 3/4 of a game, if he makes it that long. Which means Gesicki is going to be their over-the-middle guy and their red zone, because they don't even have another red zone. And there was that awesome camp clip of him making a one-hand grab, so clearly Gesicki's just the best.
Yeah.
There have been several. I mean, obviously camp clips, right? But there have been several nice clips of him in one-on-one drills making some pretty tough catches. So
yeah,
we'll see if he can keep it up.
Yeah. I mean, you think back to the 2017 tight end class with all those stud athletic tight ends. Gesicki would have been the most athletic of any of them. So he's certainly got the profile to succeed. And, you know, I think if he gets the opportunity to, he could absolutely be a top eight tight end. Yeah.
I think he walked into the right situation, too, especially with Landry leaving.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, so let's finish out the AFC East with the New England Patriots. I'm talking about tight ends, so I'm going to keep going. I think Gronkowski will play all 16 games. And not only will he play all 16 games, he's going to break his own touchdown record of 17. And will retire at the end of the year. I didn't write that one down, but I just threw it in.
Yeah, that would be crazy.
Yeah, so that is bold in three levels, because at this point, Gronkowski playing 16 games is a bold take. And it's his own record of 17 touchdowns, which would be a ridiculous amount of touchdowns.
Yep.
But with Edelman not there, I think he's going to get a lot of work because Matthews can't stay healthy. What's the other guy? Malcolm Mitchell can't stay healthy, and they're trying to trade him already. And I don't think Hogan really affects Gronk at all, because I think they play very different positions.
Mm.
Is there someone else I'm forgetting? I forgot. There's so many fucking players these days.
Barrios, clearly, but...
Yeah. My bad. Clearly, because I just thought, you know, not even in the same realm. Yeah, so I think Gronk is going to be the focal point along with the running backs, and I think Gronk is going to ball the hell out, and if he does stay healthy for 16 games, I think he has a very good chance at breaking that touchdown record, and then he will go be the next Sylvester Stallone.
He's going to WWE, bud. He's going to be a Smash Bro tag team champion. I can tell you all about it off air.
He'll be the next Jesse the Body Ventura. Okay?
There you go. There you go.
A wrestler and an actor.
That's better.
Yeah. All right. So, Michael, Patriots take. What you got?
Cool. So this is kind of bold, I think. I actually like this player in Dynasties, my 104 in rookie drafts. But Sony Michel will not lead the Patriots running backs in rushing, receptions, receiving yards, or touchdowns.
Wow.
So
nothing.
So he won't lead them in any specific category. I think he's up there in many of them, but I can see a situation playing out with Bill Belichick and his sometimes erratic use of running backs, where a guy like Mike Gillisley or even Jeremy Hill could get 500 yards this season. It's not out of the question. I think maybe Sony Michel could be in the 400 range with another 400 receiving yards, maybe Burkhead. Tops him a little bit in that area. And then I don't think he's going to be the main touchdown guy on that team, either with Burkhead or one of the bigger backs on the goal line. So, yeah, I could see a situation where Michelle doesn't specifically lead the Patriots running backs in any specific category, though I do think he winds up with the most fantasy points on the team from the running back position. But I don't think he like actually leads them in any category.
Do you think he's a top 24 running back, fantasy-wise?
I wouldn't take him in the top 24, no. I'd probably running back 3 is where I would target him for 2017. I think he takes the job long-term, but probably not this year. So, Brian, I know you have quite the other bold take on this one.
So my bold take on this one is basically the complete opposite of Michael. Mine is that Sony will become the undisputed number one running back in New England. And for the first time since Corey Dillon, there will be a true RB1 in New England, and you won't have to kind of guess at which running back is going to get that production. Again, bold takes here, right? So this is one that I don't feel ultra confident in, but that I could also see happening. You know, for me, it comes down to the draft capital and the coach, right? Because Bill Belichick, he hates running backs, man. Like, hates them, right? I mean, New England's like, I mean, there's running back production fantasy-wise to be had. The question is just always, which running back's going to get the production? For me, for them to invest a first-round pick, when you know that, like, your Brady, Belichick, Gronk crew, right, they're on the way out. This is like, they've got like a year, maybe two, as a last hurrah to try to win that sixth ring. For them to invest in a running back with a first round pick with this crew says a lot to me. I just don't think that if Belichick didn't think that this guy could be an immediate contributor, and not just in a complimentary role, but this is going to be our guy role, I don't think they would have used the pick on him, because they have some other areas that they could address, you know, with Malcolm Butler leaving at corner, and on the defensive side of the ball, you know, with the receivers and the uncertainty and the injuries and all of that stuff too. You know, there were other ways they could have gone with that pick, but they didn't. They went with Sony Michel. So for me, that's kind of what it comes down to. This take comes down to just, I think the draft, because of the draft capital, they're going to make him the focal point of the backfield, right? And we all know that backfield is catching passes out of the backfield. And
that's something you want a piece of.
Right. So if he does take a hold of that job, you know, Outhouse, you asked Michael, can he be a top 24 running back? If he does take control of that job this season, and this is and this bold take takes, you know, ends up happening, yeah, I believe he can be. So that's kind of where I am on this one. But I also understand, you know, Michael's point makes a lot of great points, you know, on the other side of that. So this is going to be a fun one to watch, I think, and we'll see what happens.
Yeah, nice. All right, that was fun. That's the AFC East. Let's move on to the NFC East. Michael, let's you go. The guest goes first. Let the guest go first. And, give us your jerseys.
Sure. So NFC East, my favorite are definitely the Eagles black jerseys. I think they're just sleek. They look great. They got that, like dark green on them too. I think the colors contrast just really well. The Cowboys blue jersey is next. I don't like the Cowboys. I am a hometown Giants fan, but I really do like their jerseys, specifically the blue ones, especially the ones with like the star on them. I do like the Giants jerseys next, the Giants blue. And rounding out, the Redskins red comes in last. But I wanted to give a special shout out to the Redskins yellow jerseys for being arguably the worst jerseys I've ever seen.
Nice. All right. I like it. I mean, I don't like the jersey. I like that you're shouting out the worst jersey.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. I'm going to go because I like like I said, I didn't really pick any white jerseys. Blue Cowboys jerseys, I specifically wrote down with the stars on the shoulder.
So that's like the Thanksgiving jersey, right?
Is it? Is that a thing? I just image searched on Google. All right, maybe while you're looking that up, I'm going to keep going.
All right.
And before I didn't even realize I did pick a color rush jersey, the Redskins, that deep, deep red with the nice bright gold numbers. To me, those two colors together are awesome, and it's such a nicer red and gold than their regular jerseys that I just want them to switch to that.
Mm-hmm.
Big fan of that red and gold combination. Eagles, I don't even know, man. Like, part of me loves the old Eagle jerseys where it actually has, like, the flying eagle.
Yes.
And then part of me just loves what they have right now.
No.
The way you said yes leads me to believe you picked the older Eagles ones, so I'm going to pick the other ones. So take that, Brian. And then finally, the Giants, who have ridiculously boring jerseys. Pretty much the same thing as the Bills. I'm going to go back to, like, the 80s/90s where they had that really thick red collar stripes and arm stripes, only because the plain blue is boring, and that's what they have right now. Again, we picked we should have, like, purposely picked divisions with good jerseys. Yeah. Like, we should have just done the West so we could talk about the Seahawks Chargers. For half an hour. The
Chargers, too? Oh, man.
Those baby blues, spoiler alert. All right, Brian, jersey ranks.
Yeah, so my first one in the NFC East is the Giants' current color rush jersey, the white. So it's just the opposite of the one that you said, Outhouse. It's the one with the thicker red collar, kind of, and this has the royal blue numbers that are outlined in the red. I really like that jersey. And again, the helmet for me is huge. The navy helmet with the Giants across that's underlined. That's the helmet that the New York Giants should be wearing, in my opinion. So that's at the top of my list. Second is the Eagles 90s green, the Randall Cunningham era. Just like you said, with the flying eagle on the sleeve.
Yep.
I love that jersey. The color of that jersey is amazing. It looked amazing with silver pants. When Cunningham was running around outside of the pocket and chucking balls 70 plus yards. I really love those jerseys. Every time I see one of those throwbacks walking, somebody's wearing a throwback jersey, a Cunningham throwback or something, I'm like, oh, I got to get one of those. And I hate the Eagles too, but those are sweet jerseys. Third, I have the Cowboys' current color rush, which is the white with the real big star on the shoulder pads. And the navy kind of across the shoulder pads. I really like those as well. And again, it kind of is the whole uniform thing. The white, you know, the white pants with the, you know, the blue and silver stripe, and then the silver helmet with that blue star on it with that jersey. I really like that getup. And then finally, the Skins home jerseys currently. You know, I like the maroon pants along with the white jerseys. It's just classic. It's what they've worn for the longest time. And, you know, I like those ones, too. So that's where I am with the East.
Jerseys.
I did. You know, it's funny, too, because so when I was a little bit younger, back in the old days, you know, I bought a lot of white jerseys. And I know, Outhouse, we've had this conversation,
never
you know,
white
where,
jerseys.
Yeah, where you hate the white jerseys, right? Because they're boring and there's not a lot to them. And I do understand that now. And I probably buy more home jerseys now than I did previously. But I used to like some of the white ones. And I do like, for me, a lot of the white has to do, like, I like the all white uniforms. So, like, the Giants color rush, the Cowboys color rush. God, I can't even, like, the Titans when they, I know their uniforms are different now, but when they wore the, you know, they had the white helmets, the white jersey, and the white pants. That's a sweet looking getup to me. The jersey alone isn't all that exciting, but the uniform, I like the way the uniform looks on the field. So that's kind of where I went with those. But anyways. Yeah.
All right. Well, while you're talking, keep talking. Just pick a team and give us a bold take.
All right. So I will go. We're going to start off and just battle it right here again, Michael. I'm going to go with the New York Giants, and I will say that Eli Manning is going to be a top 15 quarterback, and I have no idea why. No, I do. For me, it's just the weapons now that he has. You know, the guys that he will be throwing the ball to. This is the best group that he's had in his
Ever?
However many year career he's been playing in the league. Yeah, 17 years or whatever it is. 16, 15, I don't know. Yeah, this is his best this is his best weaponry group that he's had. I mean, Barkley out of the backfield. Odell Beckham, obviously. Sterling Shepard across from him. Evan Ingram down the middle of the field. An offensive line that was terrible last year, but might be a little bit improved this year with their second round pick, Will Hernandez, and and some of the other moves they've made. So I'm hoping, you know, if they can give this guy time to throw, Eli knows how to get it done. And I think that's what it's going to come down to is can they protect him enough to give him a little time, and can everybody stay healthy the full season? And if he has his full complement of weapons, I think that Eli could have a big year, and he's a guy that you can get for peanuts right now, even in Superflex leagues. So that's my bold take with the Giants. And Michael, again, I know you have a little bit of a different take here, so why don't you jump into yours?
Yeah, I mean, I have certainly heard a lot of people pumping up Eli for the weapons recently, and I think there was a statistic like, you know, a team that has a tight end one, wide receiver one, and RB one on the same team in the same year, their quarterback has only finished outside the top 12 like three times or something like that. I don't know where exactly I heard that, so apologies if I'm getting
that. Was a McDowell tweet recently.
Yes. Someone big name pointed
out. I do think it was Ryan.
Yeah. So while Eli's not currently actually going in the top 24 wide receivers, quarterbacks, this isn't necessarily bold, but I think Eli will finish outside the top 24 quarterbacks. The main reason for that is kind of twofold. One, I'm worried about Eli just declining as a player and not being able to support all the weapons, even though like this offensive group is absolutely insane. I think they're going to lean on Barkley a lot. I think he could get 300 plus carries. And Eli last year, I mean, I had him on a couple of fantasy teams. He was garbage. He had four games with under 150 yards passing. And that doesn't come from bad weapons. Like, that comes from you not being a good quarterback that year. So I'm hoping that Eli can take a step forward as a Giants fan to get them back to the playoffs potentially. But if I had to be bold, I would say that Eli, I'm not going to go so far as to say he's going to get benched. But I don't think he finishes as a top 24 quarterback just because I think his skill is declining and they're potentially transition to a more run heavy team.
And my bold pick actually leans into Michael's a little bit, which would help his argument. I think Evan Engram is going to finish outside the top 10 in tight ends. And that is not saying he's going to get injured a game in and anything like that. I think he'll play the season. I just don't think he's going to score enough points. I have nothing to back that up. It's just a feeling.
Totally.
Ingram is awesome. I get it.
Yeah.
But I agree with you, Michael. I think Eli is fading. I think he's been bad for a while. Having Odell Beckham definitely helps cover that up. I don't see anything that great coming from who would probably be the third to fifth option on the team. And like you said, there's going to be much more run heavy than they have been in God knows how long, because they've had a terrible running game forever.
Mm.
So I am all out on Evan Engram. I think he is outside the top 10. Just to add to it, like I did with Gesicki, I think he'll stay in the top 10 fantasy, dynasty tight ends, just because I think people have too hard of a time letting go. They'll magically start remembering that he's young and be like, oh, it's only a second year. It takes time to develop. You know, completely counter to what they've been saying. It doesn't matter that he's young. He's awesome now, but just whatever helps your narrative, you know, argue that. So that's my take for the Giants.
So can I jump in real quick here? Yeah. So Michael, you said 300 plus carries for Saquon Barkley and that they're going to move to a run heavy offense.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think Barkley could totally eclipse that mark.
Okay. So Saquon 01, eh?
Oh, I think that might be a good pick.
I like this guy. He can come on anytime.
Well, maybe if you're running the show. All right. So let's jump into... Okay, I was going to let you pick a team, but we're going to jump into mine now because this is happening. For the Redskins, Darius Geis will outscore Bake 101. You know what? Points per game and total points.
Blasphemy.
All around. All of it.
Blasphemy.
I was going to try and hedge a little bit to make you not as angry, but then I just saw you typed, "We're fighting" on the show sheet. So, yeah, we're fighting, all right.
All right, so... Oh, my word. All right, so here's the deal. I love Geist too. I'm a big... Okay, so obviously I love Saquon Barkley. He's like... Oh, my goodness. I love Saquon Barkley. I do love Darius Geist, though, too. The reason I don't think this is going to happen is because Geist is not going to be... If you would have said rushing yards, I would have... I absolutely think that that's a legit take and is a possibility. I think he could have. I think Geist could outrush Barkley this year, and I wouldn't. That wouldn't surprise me. But total yardage, I don't think so. I just think Barkley in the passing game he's next level. I mean, this is a 6 foot, 233 pound running back that can catch the ball out of the backfield like...
Audibly yawning, because we've heard this before.
Oh, my God. But, bro, seriously. I mean, hey, so let me... I'll tell you what. I will give you the award trophy golden star for boldest take. How's that?
Sure, if it makes you feel better that I'm right and you're wrong.
I do love Darius Geist, though.
That was also based around the fact I don't think Chris Thompson will stay healthy. And, I mean, you're not going to give Samaje Perine catching work.
And
so I think Geist will take a lot. I think he's going to workhorse it.
Yeah, and if Thompson goes down, that definitely will change things in terms of Darius Geist's outlook. Because you're exactly right. They're not going to give those touches to Samaje Perine. So, yeah, I mean, if Geist gets involved a little bit more in the passing game, if Thompson's not involved for whatever reason, then, you know, it's not as crazy. But I don't know.
All right. So you sit and stew for a minute, Michael. What's your Redskins take?
My Redskins take is that Paul Richardson will be the highest scoring wide receiver on this team in 2018.
All right. So... why do you want people that leave the Seahawks to do well?
Yeah, this is a theme, really. So this take's kind of based on work that JJ Zacharyson has put out. He puts out a great podcast every week. Yes. One of his studies was, you know, factors that influence wide receiver breakouts and wide receiver sleepers, and he kind of listed five major points. And I'll just run through them real quick. 150 PPR points the year before, not currently drafted fantasy-wise as the team wide receiver one. It's an ambiguous situation. He's not a replacement wide receiver, meaning he doesn't need an injury to play, and he's on a top offense in the league. Paul Richardson did pretty much have exactly 150 points last year, shockingly enough, and he kind of fits the bill with all the other stuff that JJ mentioned. Especially if Alex Smith can take another step forward, or I guess stay on the same level that he was last year, that offense could potentially be a top 10 offense in the league. It's not out of the question. So he kind of just fits the bill of a late round wide receiver target. He doesn't really stay healthy. That's his main thing. He'll have to put together a healthy season. But if he can, then, you know, I don't see why he can't be the highest scoring wide receiver. And I am a big Crowder fan, but that'd be my bold take.
Is there a reason you picked him over Doxson?
Mostly just because it was bolder.
Oh, cool. Yeah. I'll take it.
Yeah.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I've always loved P. Rich since the Seahawks drafted him. But that he gets hurt so much, but he's so good.
Yeah, he makes some pretty crazy catches.
Yes. So, I mean, I talk a lot of crap about, you know, people that leave the Seahawks doing well. But I think it'd be awesome if P. Rich started to do well, especially because he was part of that 2014 draft class. So.
Yeah. And sometimes you got to follow the money, too. He signed a pretty big contract in the offseason.
Yeah.
So.
And I think Brian is helping your argument a little bit with his take.
Yeah, so my take with the Skins is that Alex Smith will finish as a QB1 again.
Dot, 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 again.
Yes. Alex Smith was really good last year, like super good. Does he have the same weaponry as he had in Kansas City? Probably not overall. But at the same time, it's not like it's crap across the board, right? I mean, Kirk Cousins did some things with these guys. You know, Jordan Reed is a tight end, if he can stay healthy, that is very talented and similar to Travis Kelce as far as talent and whatnot goes. Obviously, the health is a big thing. So, you know, the other thing I like about Alex Smith is he runs the football. He picks up yards on the ground. He didn't do it as much last year because of previous head injuries, which is smart, and kept him on the field. But I just think that Smith, as he's gotten older and matured in the league, he's turned into a very solid quarterback. I think he was a QB1 last year, or he was like top three if he wasn't the QB1.
I think he was three.
He finished way up there. So, you know, and again, you know, Crowder, like I said, Reed, if Doxson takes a step, you know, I mean, there are some weapons there. Geis, obviously, the running, you know, if they can get a running game going there, that'll help too. That made all the difference in the world in Kansas City. You know, Kareem Hunt doing his thing really helped Alex Smith out too. So, you know, I think it's possible that he finishes again as a top 12 quarterback or QB1 in all leagues, all formats, I guess. So that's kind of my take.
I like it.
Yeah, I like it too. All right, Michael, I don't even remember who we've done so far, but pick a team.
Let's go with the Cowboys. My bold take is that no wide receiver on the Cowboys finishes in the top 50 in PPR.
Wow.
So yeah, this is a fairly bold take. It actually happened twice last year. Neither the Bears nor the Bills had a wide receiver crack the top 50. You think back to those like receiving charts, the receiving depth charts. They were pretty much just as bad as what the Cowboys have right now. And I think Ezekiel Elliott has a legitimate chance to lead the team in receiving in 2018. And I just think this – I do like Michael Gallup as a prospect, but I don't really envision him taking a lead role on that team in 2018 so much to crack the top 50. It's happened twice last year where no wide receiver finished in the top 50 on the team, and it might happen again with the Cowboys.
Yeah, I think this is the first team where the three of our bold takes sort of play into each other. Brian, give us what you got.
Yeah, so mine is related. My bold take is that Dak Prescott will have the lowest quarterback fantasy finish in the division. In ADP right now, he's like the 16th or 17th quarterback, I think, going. But he's the second in the division behind only Carson Wentz. I think both Alex Smith and Eli both have an opportunity to finish ahead of Prescott this season, especially if they ride Ezekiel Elliott the way that I think everybody thinks they're going to. So, you know, I don't think Dak is non-talented. I think he has a lot of talent. I think with the right weaponry that he is a good quarterback. I mean, his rookie season was really good. He was very efficient, didn't turn the ball over, you know, and last year wasn't as bad as I think most of us think it was. It was not great, but it wasn't. the team is definitely a different team too. What Prescott is good at when Zeke's in the game, it makes it a lot easier for Dak to do his thing. So if Ezekiel Elliott can stay healthy and stay out of trouble, you know, and they ride him overall, I think that does help Dak. But I don't know. I need to see it again before I'm confident in saying that the rookie season wasn't the outlier. So we'll see what happens with all of this. But my bold take is that he'll be the fourth out of four in the NFC East as far as fantasy finishes goes.
Mm. All right. And both of you alluded to things that will help my bold statement that Zeke Elliott is going to be the new dynasty running back one after this year. I think he's going to be that offense. I think he is going to get a ton of catches. He's going to probably, like, what do you think Bell's highest touch count in a year was, Brian?
Who, Le'Veon?
Yeah.
400, yeah. Yeah.
I think Zeke beats that. I think he's going to somehow finish this season with the most touches, and he's going to be completely healthy the entire time because that's what he does. And as long as he doesn't flash on other women's boobies, I think he will be on the field the entire year and will be scoring points, a lot of points the entire year.
Yeah, I certainly hope so. I drafted him in Scott Fishbowl at the two slot, so I'm hoping for that as well.
There you go. And if that happens, I'm going to take credit for your pick, even though we're talking about it now, well after you drafted.
You were in my head, Outhouse.
So. Yeah, hey, damn right I am. All right, so let's finish this up with the Eagles. Michael, give us your take.
Sure. Nelson Agholor will be a top four-round startup pick this time in 2019.
Whew.
Yeah, so he's currently going, I think, around pick 80 or 90-ish. So this would about cut his ADP in half. And if you look at – I took a bit of a deeper look into the Eagles' offense last year. And, yeah, Agholor had a lot of touchdowns, which is great. Carson Wentz was actually only on pace for a little over 4,000 yards passing through the 13 games that he played. I think his potential to take a step up in that regard and throw for more yardage in 2018, provided he's healthy. And I think Agholor has a legit chance to crack 1,000 yards. You know, you've got Alshon Jeffrey, who, yeah, just signed a pretty big contract. I think a 4-year extension off of his 1-year contract last year. But he's having shoulder surgery right now. He's not actually playing. You know, who knows if he'll be ready for week one. Hopefully he will be. But, you know, I think Agholor could really step up in that offense. This time next year, he'll be 26 years old in his fourth year his fifth year next year. But yeah, I mean, I think the narrative fits the story of how Agholor could be a top four round startup pick this time next year.
Wow. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm an Agholor fan, but that pushes well past anything I've ever expected. I like it. So I don't know if this goes against what you're saying, but Brian, talk about Alshon.
Yeah, so for me, a lot of the things that Michael said alluding to Carson Wentz, I agree with. I think that he's going to take another step production-wise, obviously assuming the knee gets back into shape and everything's okay there. For me, though, I think the receiver that's going to benefit the most from that, I like Agholor a lot. I do, and I definitely can see him also taking a step. But for me, the guy that takes the biggest step is Alshon. I think he returns to that borderline elite category that he was back in Chicago for a couple of years. Now, if you just look at his stats last year, you wouldn't necessarily think so. But I saw Alshon Jeffrey in the Super Bowl. That's the guy that I remember playing in Chicago, right? And the guy that was, you know, talked about at the turn, right, at the first and second round in startups at one point. So, you know, I think if Wentz comes back, his number one wide receiver is going to be a guy that I want to own in fantasy leagues. And I think Alshon's that guy. The reason Agholor took a step this past year, in my opinion, is because he moved to his natural position, the slot, right? And yep. Jordan Matthews was there previously, you know, and Agholor struggled big time on the outside. He moves to the slot and boom, right? I think he's going to excel in that role, and I think he's going to take another step in that role, absolutely. But Alshon's going to own the outside. And I just think he takes another step back towards the previous production he had in Chicago. And you know, this time next year, even though he's 29 years old, obviously that's, you know, if he's doing this at 25, we're going to vault him back up into that, you know, those first couple of rounds. If at 29, probably not. I mean, Julio Jones is dropping out of the first couple of rounds, which is absolutely ridiculous. I'm not even going to go there today. But but I just like Alshon to be the guy that really benefits from Carson Wentz becoming an absolute superstar in this league. And Outhouse, that'll transition, I think, to you pretty nicely.
Yeah, I think Carson Wentz is going to be the MVP of the league, and that probably leads to him being comeback player of the year as well. I don't think it was a fluke what we saw last year. I don't think the small sample size or not having film of him playing well or any of that blah, blah, blahing matters. I think he's awesome. I think he's going to keep being awesome, and he has awesome stuff surrounding him. I'm not really worried about Frank Reich leaving. I don't think that's going to have that big of an effect. I think this was Peterson's offense. So I think he's going to keep being awesome. He looks to be pretty healthy already. Maybe missing week one or two might affect the MVP. But I think if he kills it for the last, well, not 14, but 13 games, including the bye, I think he could still take the MVP. And I think he can. And I'm saying he will.
I like it. I like it. I can definitely see that one.
All right. Is that everybody? I think that was everybody,
yeah.
Right?
We got through everyone.
I think we're through them.
All right. Awesome. So let's jump into some Trade Addicts trades, because that's what we talk about. The Trade Addicts leagues are 12-team, Superflex, PPR, tight end premium. The first trade we are going to talk about is Trade Addicts 2. And we were just talking about one of these guys. It is Derrick Henry and Alshon Jeffery for Royce Freeman, Stephon Diggs, and a 2019 third. Michael, how do you feel about this trade?
I saw this on the show sheet. I think this is the Diggs side pretty easily. I like Derrick Henry, but I think Derrick Henry and Royce Freeman are very similar players, in the sense that I think they'll both be fairly volume-dependent and touchdown-dependent in their roles. We obviously don't know what Freeman is currently, but you know, I have a feeling that at least in 2018, he's going to be siphoned a little bit by Devontae Booker, at least in the passing game. And Diggs over Jeffrey is a fairly easy one for me. And I think the third is just kind of icing on the cake, and that's the side I would go with.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I was staring at this, and what it really comes down to is Henry and Freeman value-wise to me aren't really that far different, where if I saw Freeman and a third for Henry, I'd be like, all right, that's
yeah.
cool.
Yeah.
And I would much rather have Diggs than Alshon Jeffery, so I'm going to stick with the Diggs side. And apparently Twitter thought so too, because someone threw 78% Diggs side on there.
Yeah, that was me. I threw that. I looked it up. It's supposed to be my job, and I didn't do it ahead of time, so I just did it right now. And I agree. I would rather have the Diggs Freeman side on this one. I think if we're just talking this year, you know, I can make an argument for the Jeffrey Henry side, but I think long term this is Freeman and Diggs here.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
Yeah. All right, cool. So let's not linger. Let's move on to a little bit of a baby trade with Trade Addicts 3. This was Albert Wilson and a 19th third for Jared Cook. Now, the two reasons I wanted to talk about this one was, first of all, because it was one of mine, and I like talking about my trades. And also because, well, I talked a little bit about Albert Wilson not really, quote-unquote, fitting in his role that they brought him in for. And because with the tight end premium we have, it still feels like Jared Cook is being slept on, and I don't think I understand it. So I wanted to hear everybody else's thoughts on this trade and Jared Cook in general.
Yeah, I guess I'll start. I think I would go with the Cook side here. Despite being, I think if you were to look on Twitter, I think the Twitter value of this is Albert Wilson in the third. But I really do like Jared Cook, as you were alluding to, for the 2018 season. I'm not sure his contract situation, so I'm not sure what 2019 looks like for him. But I think he's a good pivot off of a guy we talked about earlier in Delanie Walker. Jared Cook obviously doesn't have the historic production that Walker has, but if you look moving forward, I mean, Jared Cook, I think, was a borderline tight end one last year. He just he's so erratic with his week-to-week performance. But, I mean, who knows what John Gruden is doing out there in Oakland, but he seems to be talking him up a pretty decent amount, and I think Cook could finish as a tight end one without any question in 2018. I don't think it's going to happen, but I wouldn't be shocked if it does. And if you're looking for a tight end, like, that's not a bad price to pay. Albert Wilson and a third.
Yeah, and that's exactly what it was. I realized I had a lot of young tight ends that may do something. But I have a pretty good competing team, and I wanted to get a tight end that I thought would score points this year. And besides Amari, I don't know. I mean, I don't really have faith in Jordy. And maybe Martavis plays this year. Who knows? So I thought Jared Cook was a great option, and I was able to get him to what I thought was very cheap, even though Twitter did go 55-45 the Wilson side. Mm-hmm. Brian, how do you feel about it?
Yeah, I like the Cook side, especially with the premium. I think that makes makes a big difference in this particular case. Like Michael was saying, Cook actually did finish as a tight end one last year. He was a tight end 12. Can he repeat that? Yeah, I think he can, probably. I don't really see, I mean, the guys behind him that I would have potentially seen taking a next step, Hunter Henry blew his knee out, so that's not happening. You know, Ebron could get in there, but it's unlikely Ben Watson's going to finish as a top 12 tight end this year either, even though he does go back to a decent situation there in New Orleans. But yeah, no, that's a little off track too. I like Cook in this one. You know, in a standard league that doesn't have the premium, like a standard PPR league, I might lean the third side for the pick more than anything. But in the Trade Addicts leagues with the tight end premium, I think this is a good deal for you, Outhouse.
Nice. I think we all just agreed on both of them, which is, I think, nice and terrible at the same time.
Makes for a great show, right? I mean,
yeah, right. I mean.
We got all of our disagreements out of the way during the bold takes section.
Yeah, it's true. So.
All right, well, that's the end of our show sheet, so that will be the end of our show. Before we get out of here, Michael, why don't you remind everyone who you are, what you do, and where they could find you?
Cool. I'm at FFZinger on Twitter. I write for DLF mostly. I've been doing work recently for FFStatistics.com. Make sure you check out their statistics database. They have data all the way going back to 2000 for pretty much anything you could ever want. And yeah, check me out on Twitter. I retweet trades and everything, post some of my data that I've been working on there. So excited to potentially go on more podcasts in the future and try to branch out a little bit more.
Yeah, man. It was cool having you on for your first podcast.
Yeah.
You did good. You did good.
Thanks. Yeah, man. Knocked it out of the park. Great job.
Appreciate it.
Appreciate you coming on.
Of course. Anytime, guys.
All right, well, I guess we'll just say goodbye, right? Unless, Brian, do you have anything else you need to say? Didn't you used to be a writer?
Who, me?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm still a writer.
When was the last time you wrote something?
It's been a while. I gotta ramp it up a little bit, yeah, for sure. So. All right. Thanks, Outhouse!
All right, well, I'll see you later, Brian.
Later, Outhouse.
Bye, guys.
All right, cool. That was fun.
Thank you for listening to the Trade Addicts Podcast. Please follow us on Twitter at Trade Addicts Pod and follow our hosts at Dynasty Outhouse and at Brian Haar FF. Remember to subscribe, rate, and review. Have a nice day, and we will see you next time on the Trade Addicts Podcast.